Assimilate the audio.
Engage.
78 years have passed since the days of the original USS Enterprise. Now a new galaxy starship has been designed.
Transporter Chief, beam our listeners aboard. Welcome to Galaxy Class, a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast on the BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I am your host today, Diplomatic Standard Bearer Kevin Scarf. With me today are Mass Podcaster Joe Keegan. Oh, and our special Hello. Guests from Infinite Diversity, Chrissy DeClercq Zalagi and Thad Haight. Hello.
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 Welcome.
Thanks
everyone.
For having us on.
Oh, our pleasure. We're doing a little BQN crossover this weekend. We just recorded an episode of Infinite Diversity, so it made total sense to have you on for a Bat'leth battle. Are you guys ready for this?
Heck yeah.
Aha. All right. Well, we were short on time because we're also recording a live episode today. As you hear this, you'll have seen the live episode already. Timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. So let's just skip the communications array and feedback and get right to our discussion.
It's offline anyway. It's been upgraded.
And also running with less time because you guys were just on ID with us. So
exactly.
Yeah.
So you're going to get more than enough of us this week. Mm-hmm. So
you'll be sick of us for sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
Here we go. Let's go on with our discussion.
This is the captain. Senior officers will report to my ready room immediately. Senior officers will report to my ready room immediately.
Immediately.
That's how important it is. Yes, run down those corridors and put the turbo lift on fast.
Do the site-to-site transport. You don't have time for that.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to Bat'leth Battle number 30. Can you believe that? This is Bat'leth Battle number 30, where we are talking Triple X. Triple X. So that is Preemptive Strike, which is season 7, episode 24, and Schisms, season 6, episode 5. Why don't we just do a quick overview here first? Any initial thoughts about these two episodes before we get into the nitty gritties?
No. Schisms terrified me as a kid.
Same.
It was pretty scary.
I love Schisms. I was really into X-Files at the time. I was like, this is perfect. I mean, it was scary. Don't get me wrong, but I loved it. And it's Preemptive Strike is uncomfortable to watch in places, and so I, you know, not one that I generally pick up and just like, hey, I'm gonna throw in Preemptive Strike.
Exactly.
But I will with Schisms. Yeah.
Cool. Well, why don't we get right into it and start with the one that makes Chrissy the most uncomfortable, Preemptive Strike. Joe, do you have a quick synopsis of Preemptive Strike?
Sure. So basically, Ensign Roe has come back onto the Enterprise D.
Lieutenant Roe.
Yes. Oh, yes, indeed. She's come back from advanced tactical training, and she's all gung-ho, and Captain Picard, they're at the Bajoran system and the Cardassians and blah, blah, blah. And she's sent on an undercover mission to try and infiltrate the Maquis, because there's Cardassian Maquis Bajoran shenanigans going on and weapons shipments coming in. And then basically, ultimately, she befriends this old Maquis dude who was, I think he's human. And he was the friend of an old Bajoran guy who died during the Cardassian occupation. And this guy, this human guy dies, and she feels really sad. And lo and behold, she decides to join the Maquis and betray Starfleet. Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. So not much. Not much happens in this.
No.
No. No, not at all.
Mm-hmm. So we always break these down into guest stars and importance to canon. And so why don't we start with the guest stars here? Some returning favorites, don't you think?
Michelle Ford. I'm not an Ensign Lieutenant Ro fan. But Michelle Forbes is in it, and she's super famous. And I can't for the life of me remember how I know Michelle Forbes.
Really?
Have you watched Battlestar Galactica?
That's how I know Michelle Forbes. There she's the go. Captain of that other Battlestar, isn't she? The big, mm-hmm. the Pegasus, is it?
Yeah, yes. Admiral Kane.
How did I know this? See? We also have John Franklin Robbins as Messias, the old human guy that dies, who makes likes Hasperat.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Spicy Hasperat.
Yes. Although it just looks like a tortilla wrap with like chicken like chicken and mayonnaise in it.
But it would maybe be spicy mayonnaise, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe a spicy pickle. I think. That's the way
it's
I would
Nashville
make
hot chicken.
That. Yeah.
There you go.
And that's how they got their nose wrinkles from the, from the spicy Hasperat.
Love it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
We also got to see our favorite admiral back, Admiral Nechev.
Yes.
I like
what's her name? What's her name?
It is Natalia Nagulich.
Oh, cool. I know. I just wanted to see if you could say it because it's not a name I ever try and attempt to say because I know I'm going to mess it up.
She's super nice. I saw her at Mission Chicago. She was lovely.
Yeah, she goes to STOV every year, and she always does photo ops in her Admiral's uniform from TNG, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
That is really awesome.
Can't believe it still fits after all this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good for her.
She's in good shape. Then there were also some other Maquis members that are putting Ro to the test. In fact, we didn't spend a whole lot of time with our main crew in this episode, did we?
Not at all. We saw them at the beginning of that the function they have for Ro coming back, and she's not really interested. They put this big spread, and they've got Bajoran delicacies, and she gets called away very quickly, which is weird. You don't leave your property just after arriving.
Picard, and that's about it.
Yeah, and Riker. And
Riker at the end. Yeah.
I thought I really liked that scene where Picard calls her out and says, "Yeah, you don't want to be here. I'll get you out." That's I thought that was nice. I like the development of that Ro Picard relationship over the few episodes we've seen her.
In terms of other Maquis people we see, we also get Shannon Cochran, who plays Kalita, and I think she's the same actress that plays the same character in the Deep Space Nine episode where Thomas Riker comes on board and steals a Defiant.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I think neither that's maybe the same person.
Cool.
Is that the episode? What's that called? Defiant.
Defiant.
No. Is it?
For DS9, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, yeah. Okay, cool. And we've got Richard Poe on again as Galt Avec, the Cardassian baddie. I can't remember where we see it. I assume we've seen him earlier in TNG.
We see him in TNG, DS9, and Voyager. He's the guy in the beginning of Caretaker who's chasing Chakotay into the Badlands.
Nice.
He was in a bunch of Star Trek like this year, and then like that's it.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And he's like, I'm done with this makeup.
Yeah, basically. He played Avec like four times, I think, in three different Star Trek series, and then never again.
Cool. Yeah.
You take the work where you can get it.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, then we had the sort of takeoff of Dukat, right? And so we didn't really need another Cardassian gull. So those are some pretty big people.
Yeah.
Importance to canon. This episode seems very important to canon. Basically, this episode, this is the second to last episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And what is its main purpose? Set up the premise of Voyager.
Yeah, it's a backdoor pilot for Voyager.
Yeah.
It was intended to be even more of a backdoor pilot for Voyager because the producers wanted Michelle Forbes to sign on for main cast on Voyager and be the character that later became Tom Paris, but she said no.
After she wouldn't sign on to be Kieran Hayes.
The second time they tried to get her to be a star in one of their spinoffs, and the second time she said no.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, and plus, I mean, we're getting these recurring characters too, so that shows. Mm-hmm. And the Maquis had been mentioned before this, right? This is not the first time we've seen the Maquis. Right?
It's
on DS9, but first
second
time, on
time we see the Maquis. The first time was the two-parter on DS9, the Maquis, which was which was in season two, so it was in the same year. It was in the same time period because it was also meant as setup for Voyager.
Right.
That DS9 episode, this one, and then. Journey's End, which took place before this in TNG, was also directly mentioning Maquis, but it was the one that set up the whole Cardassian DMZ and set up the background for the Maquis to happen.
So,
and
for
Chakotay being there as a American Indian,
for a show like Next Generation, which had been so episodic for so long. All of a sudden, we're getting this sort of world building and building on what's come before. You know, it's kind of amazing that it happened so late in the show. Don't you think?
I mean, there's still some. Even TNG is very episodic, yes, but it did have overarching.
Oh, I'm not saying there wasn't, but it wasn't as in your face as this is.
Sure,
this is very. It feels very much Star Trek universe before there was proper Star Trek universe because they were creating a storyline that was going to carry over with all of the series that were on at that point. So it almost feels less like a building up of the world building for Picard, the world building for Next Gen than it does world building for DS9. And then, of course, Voyager, too. But,
And it is interesting to me that the Maquis plot becomes less and less important on Voyager to the point where it has to be wrapped up on Deep Space Nine because that's the only place where it can be, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would have to have been anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but, it goes nowhere, unfortunately.
Yeah, after, about halfway through the first season, they realized that there was far less tension between the crews than they wanted, so they just sort of forgot the Maquis on Voyager.
Yeah, I didn't care for that.
Yeah, I suppose you'd have to, wouldn't you, if you're going to be stuck in a ship for 70 years with people that you don't like, you'd have to find a way to get along.
Mm-hmm.
I put it in the notes, the Chakotay apparently was her Rose instructor, advanced tactical training, before defecting to the Maquis.
Now, see, if you had asked me, I would have said Tuvok. That would have made more sense.
Mm.
But that's me.
Yeah, and as it says, as we see here in the outline, there's some contradictory information there because in a later episode of Voyager, it's established that Chakotay would have resigned his commission before this happened.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-mm. Interesting. So, yeah, just to know, all this comes from Memory Alpha.
Yeah.
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 It always bothered me that Robert Beltran was not in Journey's End, even like as a background character. And I always figured they just hadn't cast him.
They probably hadn't cast the character yet. They never officially say it, but it's definitely heavily implied that this is the colony where Chakotay is from.
Especially if he's resigning his commission really before anything starts to go down.
Yeah.
You know, that's where that's the beginning place. So that makes sense. I wish they had maintained some of that and not given him a tribal identification for a group that doesn't exist and all of that.
Well, that would have helped if they had gotten an actual Native American as the consultant on the show.
Well, yeah, there is that pretending whole, to be one. Yeah, that whole mess. But I mean, I think. No, I'm going to stop there because I was. I think some of the people there were Lakota Sioux, but they weren't necessarily the Vision Quest area where Wesley goes is much more southwestern
Yeah, right.
American. So forget. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
This is why we don't use StreamYard. Okay.
Christy, what makes you feel uncomfortable about the episode?
The whole episode is fine except for the scene in the bar with Ro and Picard.
Oh.
And I know it's purely just like they're putting this on so that they can have this conversation about what's going on with the thing, but it just kind of it gives me heebie-jeebies.
Mm.
I got that.
There's no rational explanation for it. It's just creepy.
The
you don't want to see them pretending to make out.
Yeah. There you go. You can be blunt about it, yeah.
The previous bar scene kind of also makes no sense to me. So Ro arrives at the bar and then right on our heels is Worf and Data. Yeah. Chief of security mm-hmm. for the flagship and mm-hmm. Data and Android who'll be able to kind of scan the room and see everything that's in it. But and they don't see her sitting right there. Right over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she turns her back to them.
Doesn't recognize Data. Like I feel like, you know, people may not know about the flagship of the Federation and Worf and all of that, but I feel like Data, you know, that's somebody who's going to be known. He's the only sentient android, and there was a big old, you know, that people know about, and there was a big old trial about it just a few years ago.
People may remember the name if they like remember that article they read about him once, but they wouldn't necessarily recognize him on site as being that person.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, because he could just be an alien with, or non-human with that kind of a skin tone. So yeah, all right, okay.
And they're on the edge of Federation space, or maybe not even in Federation space.
I mean, everything always happens at the edge of Federation space.
Yeah, it's all the edge, it's all the frontier. That's why they were celebrating Frontier Day.
to Joe's point about the timing of it, I think if we had had more time, if the episode didn't have to be 44 minutes long, they could have had Ro come and establish herself maybe a day before the Starfleet people show up. But it did mm-hmm. seem a little strange that she walked in and not 60 seconds later, Worf and Data walked in looking for her.
And if you're in the Maquis and you're a bit suspicious of everybody, then that's going to appear to be too much of a coincidence.
Exactly. I think they just had to do that for time's sake, right?
Yeah.
Now, Joe, you created this outline that we're working from today, and you mentioned the biogenic weapon.
I did not. I copied this from Memory Alpha entirely. So I think in terms of canon, the Maquis are trying to make biogenic weapons, but later on Deep Space Nine, biogenic weapons can be produced from biomimetic gel. And there's a quantity of biomimetic gel being requested by Captain Sisko or something in the Pale Moonlight. Is that the one that's it's a fake? Yeah, yes. Trading for secrets. So in terms of canon, we get this continuing reference of biomimetic gel. And it's controlled by the Federation now.
That's mentioned in the earlier DS9 episode, Distant Voices.
Oh, okay.
Does this have anything to do with the biological components of the Voyager?
No, that's bioneural gel.
Bioneural gel, very different.
Yeah.
Different from biomimetic gel.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Seriously, thank you for clearing that up. How could I get that wrong?
They're different colors as well. One's green and one's blue, so they're clearly
entirely. Oh yeah.
And biomimetic gel isn't susceptible to cheese.
Yes. Oh, there you go.
True.
Well, my thought on that is it's possible that it was legal at this time, and then they realize how dangerous it can be and made it illegal between this episode and when they talk about it on DS9.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Interesting. We also get Riker going undercover, which is something that's happened several times before. This is the last time Riker goes undercover.
First time who watches the Watchers and First Contact and Frame of Mind.
Yep.
But Does he actually interact with anybody except Ro? Aren't they? Isn't he, we just see him in the shuttle with Ro at the end?
He talks to Picard after.
He's not a Bajoran. But I mean,
he's got the little Bajoran ridges, but he doesn't actually interact with any members of the Maquis except Ro, does he?
Oh, no, not the Maquis.
Not that I know. Well, I think it's assumed he does off screen.
It must be.
Yeah.
But we never actually see him talking to anybody else. We never see Ro having to convince the other Maquis that he's her brother or something.
Well, they just take her at her word because she makes spicy house brat.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And can steal medical supplies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which leads me to the question, why can't medical supplies be replicated?
Because maybe they don't have
because
the replicator. Yeah, plot. But also, maybe they just don't have the replicator access to do that.
Or the power needed.
Yeah.
Mm.
Maybe that
we know from Voyager, replicators use a lot of power. That's why they had to ration them.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe the molecules are too complicated.
Because the Enterprise just seems to have them stocked away in a storeroom somewhere.
Hmm.
They don't replicate them as they need them either. They just...
Well, maybe it was a particular type of medical supply that had to be... that couldn't be replicated.
And it's probably easier for them to have... The Enterprise-D is enormous and has tons of room to carry things. It's probably easier for them to have a supply on hand than to replicate things en masse.
Makes sense.
And you'd also want... Medical supplies are one of those things you'd want to have and not rely on the replicator, at least somewhat, just in case, you know, the power goes out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. You've set that up for me.
We've definitively decided.
And the other point we've got here under canon is this is the only time Ro is ever addressed by her given name.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
I hadn't either.
Well, except by accident in the first episode she appears where they don't realize it's her given name and think it's her surname.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So Picard calls her Laren when he gets involved in that creepy scene that Chrissy doesn't like.
Yeah.
So I know, like, we are pressed for time here. Anything more we want to say about Preemptive Strike before we move on?
It's a good episode.
I think it is a good episode. It's an excellent episode.
I enjoy it. Even though I don't like Lieutenant Ro, I enjoy the episode.
So why don't we move on to then Schisms. Does anyone want to give us a quick synopsis of Schisms?
Sure, I'll go. Schisms is an episode where a bunch of people on the ship aren't getting restful sleep. And it turns out it's because they're actually being abducted into some subspace realm and having medical experiments done on them.
Yeah. X-Files meets Star Trek and also IKEA with determining what exactly a table is.
Yeah.
That's the most ridiculous part of the episode is make the table metal and it turns into this torture device. Like, yeah, okay.
So we go from a conference table to a surgical chair table thing. Yeah, okay, sure.
Remember the Enterprise computer had gained sentience not too long ago and created an offspring, an emergence. So I don't know what
that's
kind
later.
Of what's going. No,
I
also it, as never yeah. mind.
It's
okay. I mean, it could be in process
on TNG.
Gestation.
There's several episodes of TNG like this where they solve the issue by getting the computer to give them the right answer by figuring out the exact right question to ask the computer for it to be able to give them the answer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this episode opens with Data's poetry reading.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'd forgotten that this is where Ode to Spot comes from.
I love it.
I quote lines from that to my cat all the time.
Well, of course.
And if you were a crew member on the Enterprise D, would you attend Data's poetry reading?
No.
Probably not.
I wouldn't attend anyone's poetry reading.
Yeah.
I don't know, actually. It depends what shift I was on.
If you worked with Data every day and knew him personally, sure, I'd probably go to support. But if I was working in hydroponics or something, never interacted with Lieutenant Commander.
Or like, if I thought Data was hot and wanted to, like, you know, get in his good graces, then yeah, sure. But poetry readings are not generally the sort of thing that I would, like, seek out.
If you just saw a poster on the Enterprise D bulletin board as you're walking down the corridor, come to Data's poetry reading.
Are the tickets free?
I would hope so. There's no
money. It's the one thing that costs money on the Enterprise. Is Data's poetry reading.
Is there a free bar?
Well, it's a one drink minimum because it's in 10 forward.
It is in 10 forward.
Is the bar free and is there a buffet?
These are the things anything at 10 forward, right?
I mean, isn't everything at 10 forward free?
But while he's doing his poetry reading, is the bar open?
Nobody was drinking.
Poetry sober, so yes.
And the shots as they panned across the audience, you know, we saw Riker falling asleep, which is part of the setup of the audience of the plot, and Picard is just like trying to be nice, and then there's that long lingering shot on that woman that we've never seen before.
Picard's date, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Lieutenant J. Tracy Coco. Yeah.
No, she's there, but then there's the woman that becomes that goes to the holodeck with them.
Oh,
later.
The curly hair, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's there. We're like, who is she? She doesn't say anything. She just sits there smiling. And we don't know anything about her until we realize later she's also being abducted.
She realizes that she's not getting enough sleep and she thinks going to the poetry reading will make her fall asleep.
It worked for Riker.
It's going to be incredibly helpful to me.
The best part of this is when Riker gets poked and he starts clapping because he thinks it's over.
Yes!
Commander, you have anticipated my denouement.
Yeah.
I was always annoyed that I could not find just a straight reading of Ode to Spot somewhere, because I remember sitting with my TV with a tape recorder trying to get it like on a cassette so I could just listen to it, but I always had to like pause it and then wait until the clapping was and then go back to it. This is the days before, you know, editing software that was available to random normal people.
Y'all are gonna groan because I'm gonna mention the Star Trek cruise again, but a couple years ago, Ethan Peck was on the Star Trek cruise, and one of the things he did was stand up in front of the whole boat and recite Felis Catus, which I thought was awesome.
Oh, I love it!
Wow,
That's
cool.
So let's talk about guest stars on this episode. Who have we got on this one?
No one quite as big as the other one.
No.
We get Ken Thorley reprising his role as Maw, and we see Worf going for a haircut and then being terrified by the scissors because they look like the schism alien scissors or blade device on the torture table. And also Lanai Chapman as Sario Rhaegar. Is she the woman with the curly hair?
No.
No, is she?
No.
She's the helm.
She's the woman that Riker grabs off the table and jumps back through the subspace warp.
Got all the chips in her arms.
Yes.
Interesting.
The other woman is Angelina Fiordalisi. She plays the character's name is Kaminer. She's the one who goes into the holodeck with them to describe the table. On Memory Alpha, she's listed as a not even a guest star, a supporting person or something.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
And there was also Scott D. Trost as Shipley. He was the one who had his blood replaced by some kind of polymer.
Oh, yeah.
That was scary.
Did he die?
I believe so, yes.
I don't think he did after that.
Well, Dr. Crusher's there, so...
Yeah.
Beam out as plastic and beam in blood.
Yeah, but there's still a time frame issue.
Okay. Need somebody to die to make it seem more scary.
So no super notable guest stars here.
No, I don't think so.
Well, what about importance to canon?
I wish it was more important to canon because I want to be able to vote for this and not preempt a strike.
Well, Ode to Spot does come back.
Yeah.
Again.
The schism aliens are back in season two of Picard, possibly.
Maybe.
That's just a theory. Just a theory.
Yeah. Yes.
They do get picked up in the books, in the Titan novels, but that doesn't count for this, so...
They're at the Amargosa diaspora, which Amargosa was also the star system they were at in Generations, where they picked up Dr. Soren.
Yep.
What else?
Riker's arm gets cut off, but they put it back.
That's never referenced again.
No. Yeah. Riker takes a con, like he does in Interaction with his Quickshot 2 joystick.
Yeah, he doesn't have the joystick in this one, though.
No, but he's still flying the ship. Doesn't crash it.
He's in command when it crashes in Generations, so, you know, we can discuss that at a different time.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't crash it in Insurrection, either.
Yeah.
So not super important to canon, although there's little details that pop up again.
Yeah. It's just a good sort of self-contained, scary episode. You can tell it's a Brandon Braga episode, right?
Oh, yeah. It very much feels like a Brandon Braga episode. But I like Brandon Braga episodes. I like when Star Trek does weird stuff like this.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it. I know Braga gets a bit of a bad rap sometimes, but I really enjoy most of his episodes.
Mm-hmm. I got to hand it to, like, this is an episode really that focuses on our main cast. It's really a bottle episode. They don't leave the ship, I guess, unless you count going to a subspace galaxy. But Jonathan Frakes is really good in this episode as sleepy Riker and scared Riker and exhausted out of his mind Riker. Like, this is a Riker who doesn't know what's going on with himself. His
hair's a mess, you can tell. Yeah.
Whenever Riker's hair is all messed up, it's going to be a good episode. Like this, you got Frame of Mind.
And it's a pretty good episode for Beverly. She's got to do her investigations. And your arm's been severed and reattached,
which is a very creepy bit.
Yeah,
very much.
And the when we find out that even Data has been gone. I thought that was really effective too.
Yeah.
Data
less than 90 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The whole lost time is really creepy to me.
Yeah.
When Riker goes to bed and then not a minute later, Geordi's at the door. Hey, time to get up.
7 a.m. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. Oof. So good. Let's move along to the debate here. We've got some feedback from the poll that we ran on Facebook. So should we read some of the comments from our listeners?
I have to look at what I said because I think I participated in that.
Did you?
That's funny.
Well, who knew that you'd be here?
That's true. I didn't.
So, I guess I'll go first. Jim McMahon said definitely preemptive strike, that Schisms is a legitimately good episode with a sound, psychologically scary premise, but the look of the aliens in the episode never worked for me. Compared to Preemptive Strike, which is the final episode for one of my favorite characters on The Next Generation, Michelle Forbes gives her best performance ever in Trek in that episode. Interesting.
Then we got Patrick Carlin replies to Jim saying 100% agree, and Ro has always been a favorite character of mine as well. Thank you both.
So if you like Ro, this is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to find the thing here. Sorry.
Yeah, when you find your comment, you let us know, Chrissy.
I will.
Paul Wright Jr. says, ooh, this might be the toughest choice yet. The slight edge goes to Schisms, but it might merit a rewatch to decide.
Then we've got Vera Bible. Both are excellent episodes, but my favourite is for Preemptive Strike. It's just a fantastic finale for Ro. Also, those noises from Schisms still unnerve me.
Those are creepy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm telling you, I thought I heard them in Picard. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amy Nelson says her vote is for Schisms. It involves more of the crew. They work together. It's spooky, scary. Troy is an amazing counselor, and this is my favorite look of hers. And Riker saves the day.
Then we have Kelvin Wood saying, says to Amy, and you hate Rolaren, so.
And Amy responds, well, I wasn't going to bring that up.
And then Brian Smith says, Schisms is my choice. The idea of making an alien abduction episode in a show with aliens that they actually were able to pull off well is great. And add it to the creepy holodeck scene with the room and the chair. A preemptive strike is good, just a send-off for Ro, who they never could get to come back for any of the McKee episodes for Deep Space Nine. If they somehow pulled off bringing her back again, then maybe it would be higher in my book, because it would lead to something more than just a goodbye.
Hmm. I guess I didn't comment. I was just looking.
Yeah, I
found the you only okay. commented in your head.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the poll on the BQN to see.
The, like, the link's at the top of the...
Yeah, I didn't want to link it off. But anyway, there it is. Where did we end up? Who else commented here?
Joe Helen.
There she is. Joe Helen. I often look at these battles in terms of which episode I've rewatched more, and if that's the case, hands down, it's Schisms. Preemptive Strike is good, and it is satisfying to see Ro, however irritating she is, find a place. But the fact that we never hear of her again on DS9 or Voyager always felt like a missed opportunity given this storyline. Mm-hmm. Schisms, on the other hand, sticks in the memory long after a watch. It's expert storytelling, tapping into a cultural fascination of the time before the X-Files had even aired. I don't think that's quite true.
And that is, I was just looking that up, so we'll come back to that.
And is the thing that I love most about TNG, a true ensemble episode. Oh, and there's a Titan book based on it that really twists what you'd expect to be the story for the creepy monk aliens. Yeah. So my vote is for Schisms. So when did X-Files debut?
Almost exactly a year after this.
A year later. Oh. Yeah.
And see, I guess that's maybe just because I was such a nerd for both in my childhood and teen years that I just always associated this episode with X-Files.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, they were jumping on the bandwagon of alien abduction being a popular topic, but nope.
Yeah, we always, at least I always think of TNG as being later than it really was.
Yeah.
Like, I started watching in the early 90s, but I forget that TNG actually started in the late
80s. 87. Yeah. It ran 87 to 92, right?
94.
To 94.
94, yeah.
And X-Files started in 93. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And this was... what did it say? September of 92. So,
yeah.
And then lastly, Heidi Stuck says, love Schisms, one of my favorites. Thank you, Heidi.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's time where we come to the point where we debate and vote on this ourselves. I know we're moving through this pretty quick, but we're on a time, the time frame here.
Yes.
We have 4 minutes.
So, who's got things to say? And does anybody want to just go right in and jump in with a vote?
Well, I would say that while I think Preemptive Strike is more important for the overall, story of Star Trek and continuity in general, mm-hmm. Schisms is probably a better episode.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I will agree with you there.
Yes. So, Thad, is your vote for Schisms?
Yes.
Okay. Thad has voted for Schisms. I wasn't really entirely sure. Mm-hmm. So the obvious vote for me would be for Schisms. Because I think, like one of our commenters said, you vote with what you've rewatched more.
Yeah.
And I think that definitely is Schisms for me. Visually, I like that kind of late-on look of TNG that we get in Preemptive Strike and the setup to the McKee. But I don't like Ensign Ro, Lieutenant Ro. So I think I'm going to vote for Schisms.
Okay.
Hmm.
Chrissy, where do you fall?
Oh... Yes, I was kind of hoping everybody would go preemptive strike and then I could say schisms and that would be just, you know. I got to vote schisms too, because I think it's the better episode, even though there's all that canon, you know, stuff for preemptive strike. Although I think you can still understand what's going on with the Maquis without having seen preemptive strike, since Ro doesn't show up later. So I'll hem and haw over that one and say schisms.
Well,
Kevin, your vote doesn't matter.
That makes my vote moot, which is fine. Let me let you know that in the poll, the Facebook poll, we had 30 votes this time, which is one of the higher vote turnouts we've had. And it was 18 to 12 in favor of schisms. So the listenership agrees with us. I would vote for schisms too. I really do think that they might be the Picard baddies, might be the schism aliens. We'll see. Yeah. Fingers are crossed that I'm right here. So that means schisms is moving on to the next round. And because of the nature of the brackets, schisms will be going up against The Chase in the next round, which is season 6, episode 20.
Well, that'll be an easy one.
But in the meantime, before we get there, Batleth Battle 31, which will happen probably right after Picard is done running, will be Evolution season 3, episode 1 versus Violations season 5, episode
12. An easy one too.
Also an easy one, yeah.
So does anyone have any final thoughts on our battles, both current and upcoming?
Bring us the clicky aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy. Yeah. Sometimes you just want to be scared, and Schisms does that.
Yeah. There's not a lot of horror Trek, but when they've done it, it's been pretty good for the most part.
Exactly. Well, that puts us just moving along to our next segment.
Incoming transmission. Incoming transmission. Incoming transmission.
There are several incoming transmissions. Go ahead, Joe.
We would love to hear what you thought of today's episode, and hope you'll join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue our discussion there. You can also tweet your thoughts at Galaxy Class Pod, or you can follow the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts.
I guess I'll read this. Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find our show. You can also find the entire network's podcasts with our master feed by searching BQN. This way you won't miss any of our fine shows like All Good Things, Union Federation, History with the Zalagis, Infinite Diversity, Mickey's Marvels, The Treks for Bert's Quiz, and What's the Tea, Bev? So, Chrissy, where can people find you when you're enjoying the spiciest hasparat ever?
I don't know if I would enjoy that. I like spicy food, but I feel like Bajorans have a maybe different kind of setup for their taste buds or something. But anyway, right. So,
I said it's the nose.
It is. Maybe that's us. Yeah. Right. So you can hear me along with Thad on Infinite Diversity, where we talk about each new episode of Star Trek as it shows up. Picard just started, so yay. That sounded more sarcastic than it should have. You can also find me on History with the Zalagis here on BQN, and that's that twice weekly short history podcast I do with my fellow historian partner, Jason. And I'm happy to chat about our shows on the BQN Collective on Facebook. Last but not least, I'm on Twitter at The Goddess Livia. That's THEGODDESSLIVIA, where I tweet about Star Trek history and leftist politics.
Thad, where can people find you when you are having your arm reattached?
Well, hospital, I
find me then it would be hopefully the hospital, yes. Otherwise, best place to find me is on Twitter. I am at Tyrannicus, that's TYRANICUS, where I tweet about a bunch of things, but mostly Star Trek. And you can also hear me on the podcast I do with my friend Carl about James Bond and James Bond adjacent things called License to Spiel. That's License spelled with a C, like the British do it.
Kevin, where can people find you when you're not trying to do a podcast really quickly?
Well, you can find me here at my desk. Just getting a notice that my battery is low on my laptop because apparently it hasn't been plugged in. But if I'm not there, I'm on True North Nerds, which is a podcast I do with some local friends about all kinds of geekery and nerdery. A lot of Marvel and Star Wars content on that show, actually, because that's what Disney Plus has been giving us. Joe, where can people find you when you're not when you're not sitting bored listening to exciting poetry?
Well, when I'm not doing that, you can find me on the BQN Collective. You can email me, joepodcast@gmail.com, and you get me on Twitter and Instagram at joeyjoe77uk, the end.
Very nice.
They got to run so they can be live.
Yeah. If you'd like to help us keep...
From Starfleet coming in on secured channel. Priority one message from Starfleet.
Did that play? I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah, yeah. Twice. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We're putting out more exclusive content for our patrons that you won't want to miss, like It's Green or Amy's Math Moments. With a monthly subscription to Patreon of $5 or more, you can join our meetings of the Hive Mind on the second Saturday of each month. Watch our Patreon messages for details. For more details, go to patreon.com/BQN. A huge shout out to our very own associate producers, Jim McMahon and Davey Willett. We're so grateful to you for your support.
And at this time, we would like to thank our executive producers who make all this possible, and a special thanks to Mark White for our artwork and Joe Keegan for our very own show music. So thank you for beaming aboard the Galaxy Class.
You're welcome.
And until next time, Klingon hair is such a pleasure to cut that I sometimes get carried away.
Live long and speak faster.
Live long, speak proper.
That's it.
And... okay. Cool. We've and got 4 minutes. Yes. And
sorry recording. To get you right up to the end there.
No, that's cool. We're all set up.